So Philip would go and buy a Maserati. I'd go and buy a Porsche. Mark would go and buy this. Scott Didier would go and buy that. So the four musketeers, here we are. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
And we had plenty of money, mate. We were spending turnover, not profit. We were spending turnover. So as I said, in 1990, Mark's probably alluded to that, was when the Arsenal...
When the shitstorm coming, you were in it as well.
Yeah, we're in the shitstorm, mate. I feel like we've heard this. Yeah, I was
first one in, by the way. I'm very proud of that. I'm first going, so... Yeah, that was a turning point. I remember going home to Gabs, I said, see that couch you're sitting on? She goes, yeah. I said, you better get off it. I said, why? She says, we don't own it anymore. So, yeah, that was it. We lost the house, lost everything.
No one's ever lucky. I think the only luck you get in life is where you're born, and then you make the rest.
Stick around, it's going to be a good ride.
It's interesting what we're chatting before about where potential locations for our pod to go. There's a bit of talk coming down my way. I don't know if we can.
What's got what? What do you mean?
She's up for sale.
Oh,
the Blair Gary House.
Oh, bullshit.
Boards out the front.
So we're expression of interest. We're going down that route for now.
I'd agree.
If we need to go auction, we'll go to auction. So literally last week, I think it was Tuesday, Danny said, I think we should sell. I said on the Thursday, I agree. By the Saturday, we met three or four agents. By Tuesday this week, we appointed the agent. By Wednesday, she's up. She's
dead set.
Expression of interest.
Wow.
Congratulations. So I'm excited, boys.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. What changed?
What changed?
Yeah, why? Because, you know, you were initially... You were
talking about it about 30 episodes ago. You were talking about that.
Yeah.
I was, yeah. So...
yeah, the old studio, man, we were talking about.
The market's still strong down our way at that price point. Yep. So that's a good thing.
Yep.
And with what looks like it's going to happen next year, what is going to happen next year is land tax is going to go up minimum of 200%. So where we live down the peninsula, only 44% of homes are occupied, so the rest... like investments, short-term stays. Yeah. So when this, obviously, land tax goes up, can people afford that? There's going to be a lot of stock on the market, interest rates. It looks like the market may drop slightly. So we feel like there's going to be a few bargains.
So you're jumping the market.
So we just think we might be timing it okay.
Tell you what, Pete. Hollywood.
Project site.
We'll buy one with a house on it, then we'll figure out what we've got to do.
To be fair, it's been a bit of a superpower of yours and Danny's, yeah? Like, you've been able to time...
We have timed it well, generally. Well,
most times. Was it Newport?
Seddon,
yeah. So, yeah. Seddon, that was good to you. Then they've done this one. It's better at timing than us.
Mate, we're excited. We're nervous. We're excited. But we feel like it's the right decision for us. So.
Man, you got to do it again, dude. Like, every time you do it, it's good to you. So, why wouldn't you do it again?
Correct. I agree.
The listeners can't see, but the listeners can't see this, but I'll show the boys a little photo here of just what's gone up at the front of our house. Expression of interest only, just listed.
Oh, that's it. Bonnie can zoom in.
If you're watching.
The old core flu.
Because we're expression of interest.
Who'd you go with? Who you got?
So we've gone with RT Edgar. So we met everyone down there. Some really good agents. We decided to go with RT Edgar.
Point of difference. What got you?
Weren't on our list, to be honest, and a good friend of mine, Marty Rankin, recommended us to go meet these guys.
Yeah,
presented really well.
Yeah,
and then I think the presentation and their facts that they had just really showed us they were the ones.
Do you think
they sell the most?
They sell the premium listings
and the most.
So that recommendation maybe held a bit of weight.
It did, but it was more the presentation, the feel. Sitting with their team and us.
Did they talk price? Because my biggest thing when you're trying to pick an agent is I feel like they're all just pumping their price up, telling you what you want to hear.
I reckon that was probably pre-COVID that happened. I think a lot's changed since COVID. I think agents are more authentic now. They're more real.
So
everyone presented really well. I'll say that down there.
They all ran the same price point that they
reckon. We told them what we think the house was worth, and we're realistic. We know a quick deal is a good deal.
Yep.
And they're like our range is very similar.
Yeah, okay.
So we're realistic. We know what it's worth.
Yeah, wicked.
Yeah.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome.
So, yeah, bit of development news, gents.
That's amazing. We'll watch that with bated breath.
Have you got a bit of audio issues going on there, Peter? I can see you're all looking a bit flustered too.
Yeah, I'm not hearing you. I'm more hearing you out here than in the ears.
Oh, okay.
That's all. I just thought I'd bring it to everyone's attention now.
Am I good? Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. It must just be your headphones. I don't know. Bonnie's saying we're good.
Oh, no.
We'll cut that out, hopefully. Hopefully that all gets cut out.
Ah, it's all part of the experience, mate.
But, boys, so first open Saturday. This Saturday we're having a you got to register to come in and have a look at it.
Well, we were talking about... We were literally 10 minutes ago talking about doing a podcast from there, dude.
I didn't want to say anything.
Oh, yeah, no worries.
He'll sell it. There'll be a settlement period there and we'll have to
get a long settlement so we can do our podcast.
Nah, so that's the point of difference. Ooh. We're ready to settle within a week.
7 days?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you got
to... Let's be honest, you got to
find someone who's got the cash in the bank for
correct.
7 days.
So,
yeah. So
well,
our, level, every chance it'll be a month or two.
Well, not really. What we're thinking is... We're hoping we get all the interest in the next 2 weeks. Someone buys it within 3 weeks. They move in within 4 weeks. Because they're going to want him move in before pre-Chrissy and spend the holidays down there.
Wow, that's where you're going to get the most bang for your bucks that you're going to charge him.
Yeah, I love
it. Bit of strategy about when we sell, obviously. Got to time it. So we thought the pre-Christmas rash.
You weren't tempted to stay down there and tan the body yourself over Christmas?
Nah, well, I'm going away, mate, remember, for 6 weeks.
No, let's follow that along, guys. That's great, Dan.
Yeah, congratulations, man. That's amazing.
Cheers,
love
lads.
Love to hear the updates and the interest as we roll along.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So if you're looking to buy a house, I don't know when this goes out.
Dude, I can't afford your join.
No, I'm talking to the audience. If you want to buy a house.
None of us can
down
buy
the peninsula.
Probably the guest probably able to buy it, but not us, boys.
All right. I might ask him if he wants a house.
He's in the property, I hear.
That's our segue. All right, guys, let's get into it. Welcome back to Australia's number one podcast. We are the little fish. We speak to the big fish about town each and every week. Like, share, subscribe. Anyone that's going to get value out of this algorithm.
Loves it.
Today's guest founded the electrical juggernaut Brolec back in 1989 at the ripe old age of 21, boys.
Mm.
1989.
What were you doing at 21, Benjamin?
Oh, you don't want to know.
That's right. Now Brolec, one of Australia's top three privately owned electrical contracting business. They're sort of more in the mechanical space, boys.
Yep.
For those that are interested. In 2018, that same business was engaged by 101 Collins Street, Melbourne, to light up one of the city's tallest and most iconic buildings.
Yeah.
You know, I know 101.
Yeah. It's the crown jewel, man.
The crown, well, you've read the intro.
Oh, is that what it's...
Not only did they successfully transform that address into the crown jewel of the city's skyline, but they bagged an award for excellence in the process.
Oh, that's good.
Boasting more than that, a career in servicing the likes of Melbourne Airport, Fed Square, Victoria Police, some big names there,
just
boys.
Just the joints that matter.
Some big contracts, just the joints that matter,
just
Benjamin.
The joints that matter.
Our next guest has also seen his name up in lights also, playing circa 250 Victorian amateur football matches. Give it up for sporting and business great, Ricky Brockwell.
Ricky! Hey.
And a ripper bloke to boot, boys.
And he's the first one to ever walk around that way.
Comes the right
way. Beautiful.
Love that.
He's done a bit.
Sorry, mate.
Sounds like he's done a bit, old Brocky.
Yes, boys.
Don't want to buy a house down the peninsula.
just heard that. What's on it? Have we got a turn like that, mate? No, thanks for having me. Fantastic to catch up with you young blokes. Love your work. Really good.
Thanks for your time, Ricky. Have you got a price range there for Rick?
Four bedrooms, 2.5 bathrooms, 2-car garage, got a pool, 2 entertaining areas, automated home,
sand on the
400 metres from the beach, on dirt roads, on the thinnest part of the peninsula, Blair Gowrie.
What's the price
five
range?
Five minute drive to
price
the
range.
Conti in Sorrento.
What's the price
range?
I didn't realise you're a real estate agent.
I just know my product.
It'll be on the vendor statement, mate. We'll see it on
custom built home
on realestate.com.
10-year structure warranty.
Wow.
And furniture added if you want to pay cash for that later on.
Yeah. Jeepers. Does it bring the weather with you, mate?
Beautiful weather down that part of the world.
This is a bloke who resides on the Gold Coast. For that very reason.
Yeah, true.
So what do we get a price range, roughly? Is it one,
we'll,
two,
we'll have to look
three,
it up ourselves, by the sound.
I'm going to look it up. I'll put it in the description.
Put a link to realestate.com.
I'll link the property.
Ricky, thanks for coming in, mate. Enough about Dan. I know you're a busy man. Looking forward to the chat today. We'd love to start early on, mate. The childhood, growing up, big family. How has that shaped you, mate?
Well, as we spoke the other week when we first got into this, I as a kid growing up, I was very... grew up with a humble family, mum and dad, and with five of us in the family. And went to the local schools together. Went to... I went to an all-Catholic school as a kid. Yeah. I remember the first day Mum took me to school. I love my mother and my father. I just had a fantastic upbringing. That's what I want to sort of reiterate in this conversation, because a lot of people that say it between 15 to 20 really struggle with where they're heading and what's in front of them. And I'll go back to that in a minute. But yeah, I was born and bred in West Preston, and I went to local St. Ralph's and also down to Sacred Heart in Preston, and then across the road to Morris Brothers Preston, where I finished my illustrious school career. We'll go back and talk about that, because I wasn't a real freak at that, let me tell you. Anyway, I met, you wouldn't believe it, but I met my wife, Gail, when I was 12. So we are still together, 40 years in March next year. So I've known her for 52 years. So we had a lot of fun between 12 and 24, by the way. But so, when I got married. But we sort of humble family. I remember Dad built our house from the ground up. My mother was the rock of the family. She was a beautiful human being. And her life has unfolded amazingly. So... I was recently at a function, and it was a particular, I won't name the foundation, they do great work, but they had this big screen on in this auditorium, and it had this I don't know what you'd call it, just how 15-year-olds see life now as they're growing up, sort of around the world. And I'm looking, and I watched it, and loud music, murder, robbery, streets, violence, and then a bit of happy stuff, da-da-da-da-da. Come to the end of the conversation, everyone in the room, I think 1,000 people, had to shut their eyes, think back when you were 15, and then they picked randomly around the room, you know, can you give us your story when you're 15? And most of those stories were just doom and gloom, like I was bullied and I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. And I was trying to get my hand up, and I thought, people probably won't even understand this, but my life at 15 was fantastic. You know, I'd come racing home from school when I was 13, 14, up to 15, fly in the door. Mum would have me old Sharon, wasn't a Sharon, then it was a Ross Faulkner, polished up with Nugget, out in the street with the boys, had a bottle of cordial waiting for us, a Vegemite sandwich, you know, and we're out in the street, we kick the footy till the bloody lights come on, in we go, Mum and Dad at the table, the five of us just throwing shit at one another and having a crack, you know, we're all a huge family. And my family, my life then was just amazing. You know, I had the most beautiful upbringing because of two beautiful people. Mm. And if I could tell that story, then maybe the vision that we've seen up on that screen wouldn't be so daunting. And people have got to realise that not everyone is like that. Mm. And I do feel for the people that grow up in an environment where they've got parents, you know, single mothers, single fathers, people with no sort of really grounding or background or have what I had, to thinking, well, there is a chance for everybody if you just, you know, you just got to try. And you know, it wasn't all rosy from then. From 15 till I flunked Form 4 at school.
Yeah.
And it was Brother Raymond at the time. He's dead at the moment, but he was one of the best mentors you could have as a kid. And I was captain of the local of the footy team.
Yep.
And because I was captain, he was a coach, then he sort of mothered me through. And he got me through Form 4 on religion, would you believe? Yeah. And I was captain of the football team. So I flunked everything. I was just an absolute... I was pretty ordinary, and I was a bit of a muck up there. My claim to fame at Morris Brothers was banging the drums and marching the kids into school.
Yeah.
So I would be late to get into the class.
Yeah.
You know, and then I was just a muck up. Then I'd grow my hair long, and you have to put it in a bun and put your cap on so the brothers wouldn't kick your ass. And, you know, like, so it was, I was a bit of a left fieldy. And anyway, I got my ass kicked one night by my old man. He goes, well, you flunked Form 4 and, you know, put you through da-da-da. I said, well, I just don't like it. My brother went to uni, become a Bachelor of Economics and Commerce, Warren, my oldest brother. Quadragenius, went on and kicked ass in uni. And there's this little bag of shit sitting around. What am I going to do? Just be a little smart ass, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And Dad said, I'll tell you what you're going to be, mate. You're going to be a plumber.
Oh.
And I've got a mate who can, and we're going to get you the job. So I got the job as a plumber. It was a company called Trend Air. But fortunately for me, they were mechanical.
Yeah.
And they did plumbing and electrical. Uh-huh. Well, I got 2 months into the plumbing and I thought, bucky, it's not digging. I'm not doing this. Yeah. I don't want this shit.
Takes a
special. Being a little smart ass.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyway, at 15, I started my apprenticeship as an electrician, 2 months in, and learned a lot about mechanical stuff and putting... I didn't do a lot of electrical. I did a lot of duct fixing and I get climbing under the house. I got stuck under a house one day. We used to do the old houses in Camberwell. You know, that the walls, the foundation, went straight through and you had to punch holes underneath to get into a room.
Because
every room was, you know.
Yeah.
And I got jammed in there one day. And then a dog barked me up, bailed me up at the hole to get out. And I couldn't get out of there for 4 hours. I got locked in a bank in Northcote one day. But that's another story. And my actual boss at the time loved to drink. So at lunchtime, we'd be, say, doing the Bundoora Hotel. And in we go. They'd have 6-8 pots at lunch. Yeah. So I'm in there and I'm 15.
Yeah.
And I've quickly learned how to drink beer.
Yeah.
Old Bundys.
Yeah. If old Bundys or whatever. So we, you know, and I'd be going home 3 parts cut. So
I reckon that's a pretty common thing, Rick. I reckon I had a bit of that, actually.
No, back in the day.
Well, back in the day, you did, because, you know, like, I was only tiny, and I used to stand on the, you know, I used to have the...
The footstool.
The snout stop. You know, you stand on the top of it, and so I looked a bit bigger to have a pot. But I'd tip, after the third one, I'd just start tipping them down the trunk.
Yeah.
Down the thing, and I'd go like that and go like that, and they'd just stay there all day. And they get all their work done, and so I was going home. 3 parts, you know. Yeah. I'm walking the door and mum's looking at me, what's going on here? Anyway, she quickly grabbed hold of that.
Yeah.
She goes, nah, that's done and dusted. You're not doing it. Anyway, she got me a job at a company called Crockford Robertson, who were a fairly big mechanical they actually manufactured air conditioning equipment. So I end up over there. And at 18, David, my mate Bones, who's still with us now at Brolick, 33 years on,
yeah.
We ran the whole electrical contracting department at there when we were 18. Yeah. So we had responsibility and it really changed sort of the dynamics. I got stuck in a factory building switchboards for a while and then thought, don't like this much because you're not out and about because we used to be out and about everywhere. So I thought, bugger it, I'll try and get out in the service division. And we end up, both of us out in the service division, and then finished my apprenticeship. I think I was just 19 when I finished, 19, maybe 20, and then went to sales for 12 months and sold a lot of stuff for the company and thought, bugger this, if I can do that for Crockford, so I'm going to do it for myself. So at 21 or 20, I started Rick Brockwell Electrical Proprietary Limited. That was the name of the company.
Yeah, how's that? So you had no idea what you were going to do, bit of a nomad, but you had good parents who said, hey, go do this, and you kept rocking up and trying things.
Yeah, well, as I said, that thing that put in my head that day on the coast when I was watching that video was, that didn't happen to me. I mean, I was probably the drama because I kept on saying, well, no, and I kept on rebelling and stuff, but I knew I wanted to be something. I didn't know what it was, and that's the issue you're going to have now. Especially, as I said the other day, we're more connected than we've ever been, but we're less connected, really, I think, because of, you know...
Face to face, we are.
You know, we don't... there's a lot of people who are going to be growing up that haven't had that nurturing that we had as kids. And, look, I've never had one blue with any of my siblings, ever. Yeah. Never had a crossword, but the five of us have never had a blue.
Are you kidding me?
Ever. Ever about... And I could go to them for anything, and they can come to me for anything. So, Mum made us... and Dad made us very, very close and good and respectful.
Respectful.
You know, you do the right thing. You know, we had shit fights at home. You can imagine sitting around the family table. But and then to throw that into a little bit of a spin, I mentioned it the other day when I was coming home from work from Crockford Robertson, I saved up some money and bought one of those 240Z Datsuns, yellow. Unreal. And I ran straight through a tram on the way home.
Oh dear! Is this after you at the pub?
No, straight out for work, but hadn't been in the pub. Bang, straight through it. I thought, oh, here we go. What do I do here? So the tow truck takes the car away. I fly home in a cab, walking in the front door. My old man's home. I said, how you going, Dad? He said, yeah, good. What have you done? I said, oh, just, you can believe it. I just ran up the arse of a tram. He goes, righto. He said, take the money out of the shop. It'll be right, Dad. I said, we had a clothes shop. My sister had a clothes shop down in Glen Iris. I said, I'll take the money out of the shop. I said, why? Well, take the money out of the shop. Can't you fix it? He goes, no, everything'll be all right. And he just took off. I thought, oh, righto. So I used to go and had a shower, settle down a little bit, got into Mum's room. I used to grab her brush and brush my hair. And there was a note up on the top right-hand
corner of the mirror, and it was my old man was leaving that day. He shot through and left my mum.
Oh, wow.
That was the tipping edge. And yeah, then my other siblings had gone. My eldest brother had gone to Queensland. My sister, Maz, went to, up to Queensland. And there was just Joe and my eldest sister. Well, she got married a long time before that. And I was left with Joe and I, my young sister,
yeah,
and mum. Yeah. So
so there's three of you left in the house.
Three of us left. I was the breadwinner.
The breadwinner just walked out the door.
Yep. So I was on $21.60 a week.
Yep.
And I used to pay mum $5 board and put $5 in the bank, then go and buy a packet of iCant, a box of matches, and stick them up under your...
Yeah.
Of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And knock around with the boys with $4 or $5, which was plenty of money in those days. But so it was... And I grabbed that note off it, and my mum used to walk, shop down at Thornbury at the local SSW, and she walked in the door and she had a little SSW bag, and I'll never forget it. And I looked at her and I had this note. I thought, I think it was 30 years of marriage, mum and dad, maybe a bit more than that.
And how old were you, Rick? How
I was 18.
18, yeah.
Yeah, I just came out of my time, yep, smashed my car,
yep,
and you wouldn't believe it, Gail's father at 47... had passed away that week. So,
you're kidding.
Yeah, and we were just girlfriend, boyfriend, but, you know, it was daunting and I loved him. He's a beautiful man. So it was all sort of, this is
all
it.
Happening.
You know, it's crashing, it's crashing, it's crashing. And my grandmother, she'd passed away, and my mum's stepbrother's Down syndrome. And his name is Kenny Benny. And everyone out there will just get this and they'll understand it. But he was the glue. Really, made our life. Anyway, mum said she'd look after him. So there was six of us. I call it was five Down syndromes and one smart one.
Yeah, yeah.
So Ken became the glue. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
He was just amazing. He died at, I think he lived to 63, 64, which very rarely happens.
Yeah.
But he was well looked after and nurtured because mum made it that way. So mum got a job down the Helping Hand Association where Ken worked. He used to make those little sponges and stuff and bits and pieces for, you know, anyway, he went to work and he had something to do. Yeah. You know, it was like a sheltered workshop.
Yeah, yeah.
But so mum became that person, you know, and then she got a job and she started fending for herself and the love of her life had left. She never met anyone else and that became the family sort of got disjointed, but it wasn't really. I didn't speak to the old man for 10 years until my brother rang me and said he had cancer and I had to go. I went up and seen him and he told me the whole story. And then for the next 20 years after that, I think it was, or 15 years after that he lived, him and I were great mates. We got on. Yeah, because he's my hero.
So you were able to forgive him?
Oh, yeah, I was because when he told me the story, I got it. He'd fallen out of love. I mean, what can you do if someone falls out of love? I mean, he's my hero and I thought you've let us down. So that all happened in that area that when we're 18 and I thought, well, you know, you've got to be, as I said the other day, it's a sliding door. You can either go that way or you can just go that way.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, a brother put me in as the, when I was, I think, 17, 18, into, I was a secretary of the West Brunswick Footy Club. So I knew nothing about it. He said, you've got to learn this shit, mate. Correspondence in, correspondence out, learn business, learn how to, you know, so I did. And he said, you've got to come back play footy too. And I was a pretty ordinary football player when I was 15. I was tiny. I used to get knocked around. I was scared. My old man used to say, you used to run that wide at Swore Park. You're on the footpath.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And so I sort of got a bit bigger and started playing footy again. And fortunately enough, when I turned 21, they made me captain coach of the senior footy team. And I thought, well, this is good. And my brother-in-law, Mark Rice, who's now passed, and Bobby Ashton, who's now passed, took me on a journey that shaped my life. And I can, if anyone's out there and wants to understand a sliding door moment, that was it.
That sounds like a pretty shitty day, Rick.
What's
pretty
a shitty
day? And like, what was that like, taking on that load after that point, becoming the breadwinner of your family, protecting...
And were you angry? Were you initially angry and rebelling?
And was there a chance of you going, oh, this is too hard? You know, like what's...
Well, you know what? I was just shocked. Can you imagine your mum with your dad, who they've been together for a long, long time, raised us, excuse me, beautiful family. She's walking in the door, what she normally does, done the shopping, works her ass off. We had a combustion oven that used to cook, you name it, it did, heated the house, it did everything, it didn't have any of that. It was just
you know, slow burn. She lived through the Depression. She knew, you know, that she had a family that she had to raise. And I thought, well, and I've got to tell her, I've got to give her this note to tell her that, can you imagine doing that to your mum, your dad?
Yeah.
Your dad's your hero. He's gone. And you hand that note to your mum.
Yeah. Like, do you remember that pretty clearly?
I'll never forget it.
Yeah.
I'll never forget her walking in. She's only tiny, mum. Like, and she used to work her ring out. And she walked in the door and she had SSW. She goes, right, I love you. You got this, you got that. I said, yeah. And I said, oh, God, I just got to give you this, mum. I don't know what's going on. And I just never forget that.
How long was it, Rick, from when you read that note until you saw him and spoke to him again? Was it
10
years? 10 years. So he walked out that day.
Well, and I didn't know where he went.
Yeah.
No one knew where he'd gone.
He went underground, did he?
So yeah. I jumped a caravan and he had three kids, his partner, who he married for 20 years. And look, to be honest with you, she was fantastic. Like, she looked after my dad and, you know, through right to the end, I buried her probably 4 years ago now. But I looked up, she looked after Dad, and they had a great little place on the Gold Coast. Wouldn't believe it. We all sort of ended back up there. And they run a good little business, and they went about it. They raised three kids themselves, which are beautiful kids, you know, like I've spent time with them.
So they're half siblings.
Yeah, well, they are. Yeah. And but before that, they were friends anyway, you know, because we used to go to the footy together, the whole family, with everybody. Used to go and watch the Mighty Roys for Troy Footy Club, bang, bang, bang. And then... So that was probably the most, about, as I said, the sliding door moment came when my brother said, you know, get down here and we want you to do this and this and this. So I did. And we were lucky enough to win the premiership my first year in, and I took them a couple of grades up. Well, I don't think I did. I think Bob Ashton and Mark Rice did, but I was the bloke that I was pushing as their, you know, and I knew darn well that once I was on the ground, I was playing. I didn't want to know about coaching because I talked to the players at three. But we had a fantastic time. But it also empowered me a little bit to be a leader and to become strong and make conviction. I think conviction is very important in life. I mean, you got to, if you're in anything, family, business, you know, the three pillars of the Banyul Football Club, which is the next story when I went there in 1984, right now is... It's FDR, it's family, discipline, respect, or family, respect, discipline we have on our, underneath our, that's our, what we stand for. And I think back then it was in my area of expertise, I didn't even know what respect meant until you earned it. And then all of a sudden you're thinking, well, I've now become a leader, I think. I'm a leader, I think I'm a captain, I'm a coach, I'm this, I'm that. And then my business, right, we started Rick Brocker Electrical in... I think that was, 70, maybe 78, 79. And that's where I met Mark.
Yeah.
That era, round about there on the Murray River.
Yeah.
Had this old green truck that had Rick Brockwell Electrical on one side. It was in orange, yellow on this green truck. And the other side, my sign writer got half whacked one day. Doing the other side, he just had Rick on the other side and never finished it. So I drove around the truck with Rick on one side, Rick Brockwell Electrical on the other. He used to park on the side of the bank at the Murray, and everyone knew it was our care because it just had Rick on it. So, and then away we went. You know, employed a couple of kids. Bobby Ashton's young son was my first apprentice who passed, and away we went. And I reckon by age 24, 25, I had 10, 12 electricians on.
Yeah, yeah. So you're always, I guess, ambitious to grow. You know, you're third biggest contractor, you know, in your field in Australia. You know, early on, were you hungry? You know, were you busy? More work, more blokes. Let's blow this thing up. Or was it just this organic journey of growing, doing right by people, winning work?
Oh, no. We're Hollywood, mate. Like, back in those days at 21, like, Philip Ross is another guy that I think would be well worth getting the story off. Because I met Philip.
Yeah.
Out of the middle of nowhere, back through the footy club again, the Old England Hotel, we used to drink there. And used to go bike riding around Westerfold Park. And he said, oh, come back to my joint, I want to show you something. So I go back to his place in Linwood Parade in Templestowe. You walk into his house, and he had computers. He had computers everywhere, in every room. Everyone's working in this house that he lived in. And he had his boardroom in the main bedroom. And I'm thinking, my God, how does this work? And he was Philip Ross Electrical. I was Rick Brockwell Electrical. We never ever clashed because we were mechanical and he was light and power. but we just grew on one another. And then it was who had the biggest dick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So Philip would go and buy a Maserati. I'd go and buy a Porsche. Mark would go and buy this. Scott Didier would go and buy that. So the four musketeers, here we are. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
And we had plenty of money, mate. We were spending turnover, not profit. We were spending turnover. So as I said, in 1990, Mark's probably alluded to that, was when the shitstorm came,
and you were in it as well.
Yeah, I feel like we've heard this. Yeah, I was first one in, by the way.
I'm really proud of that. I'm first going. So that was a turning point. I remember going home to Gabs. I said, see that couch you're sitting on? She goes, yeah. I said, you better get off it. I said, why? She says, we don't own it anymore. That was it. We lost the house. Ended up with an old, dirty old EA Falcon living in Longs Road, Lower Plenty. And I was pretty destitute. Out and about. Rory was just born, like he's 31 now. It was a lot going on. The babysitter ran over the cat, so that was a good day.
Yeah.
We're only renting the place, and the lady said, you can rent the house as long as you look after the cat for the year. We looked after the cat, all right.
Yeah.
So
what was, like, that's the thing, you know, that time of year, like, my parents were tangled up in it. Everyone was tangled up in those hard times, 1990. Around then, what was that like going home to, you know,
how's the ego, childhood,
and how quickly did it happen, Rick? Did you see it coming and you feel it coming, or you're driving around in the Maserati and then you get home and it happens?
Well, it's a knock on the ego,
it's like bang.
Well, I'll tell you one thing it did, and I think that it would have been drummed into you blokes by now through a certain person, bottom line, profit and loss, GP profit and loss, bang, net. We did, what? Mm. I've invoiced $100,000 this month, you know. So let's go and spend $100,000.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? We didn't get the bit about the little bit at the bottom, which might be $10,000 you can spend because that's what you made.
Yeah.
So we were just spending. But we had a good time doing it. But it come down when you hit pretty hard. I was, but I got a phone call from a mate of mine. That's another backstory. I was driving the pub one Friday night. And I got a phone call from a bloke, mate of mine, Rex Brent, who used to be the game fishing. And we did a lot of work together as kids. I used to do a lot of his Warriors air conditioning equipment. And he said, you got to go down to Brayside. I said, what for? He goes, I'm going to the pub, meeting the boys. You know, we're playing footy tomorrow. We're always going to have a few pots. And he goes, I'd go down there and see this bloke. So I thought, righto. So at 4:30, I drive all the way to Brayside, peak hour, get there. And he said, what do you need? He goes, I need a PowerPoint put by my desk. I thought, Jesus. You know? But there in those days, it would have been about $40 to put a PowerPoint in. Anyway, I put the PowerPoint in, plugged his calculator. Thank you very much. Thanks for doing that, because I've got work to do tonight and I want to da-da-da. So I said, no worries, mate. He said, by the way, Ricky, he's German. Do you do this? I said, what? Walked out the back. He owned Viscount Consolidated Plastics in Brayside. They were the biggest... The inventor of the wheelie bin.
Okay.
His name's Bernie Herman. That's his name.
Yep.
So you got... I walk out, there's bumper bars getting made for Ford Motor Company. There's this tooling shop. There's this whole street. And I'm looking at it going, my God, how long's this been going on? Anyway, I walk east. He said, come down to the main. We'll go down to the main. For the end of the street. He owned Mills Road. Part of Mills Road. So I walk down into this factory. He goes, do you do this? They were putting a 2,500-amp buzz trunk down the middle of the factory.
Yeah.
And I said, he said, do you do this sort of work? I said, that's all we do. We do that. Oh, no way. Days.
Did you? Did you do that, or you're full of shit?
Put a PowerPoint in
it before his life.
And I'm broke.
Like, of course you do it. You know?
So I said, we do it all the time. So I walk out the door, bum's going like that. How am I going to do this? So anyway... I went back to the footy club, at Bandle Footy Club, and there was four or five guys that worked for this huge company that did that sort of work in electrical. And I thought,
beautiful.
Guess what? I reckon I've got this job. So I go back and I priced it, won the job, started the job, killed it, had a ball. And that was the birth of Brolic, because Brolic was a holding company. It was we used to have little investments going. I'd go and buy a little block of land or do something.
With your revenue.
And then Rick Brockwell Electric. Yeah,
with your turnover.
Anyway, my dad, Brolic, was Brockwell Electrical. So just become Brolic. And then I just had this little thing sitting there. I thought, well, Rick Brokolich will stuff. And anyone out there, I'm telling you, never name your company after your own self.
Yeah.
Silly idea.
What, tell us why.
Yeah, well, Rick Brockwell Electrical. Like you
know.
I did a Part 10, for Christ's sake, you know. I've gone ass up.
Mm.
Philip Rossell, you know, like we all had these. Mark was the only smart one with you blokes, with Australasian. Mm. So, well, it was R&M then.
Yeah, R&M shop. Yeah.
And I thought, righto. Brolic. So how am I going to turn? I got about to make the holding company into a trading company, which I did straight away. But then had to get accounts again with middies, had to go to all these blokes. And Anton Middendorp's old man, Nick, walked in my office. AWM, I owed a shitload too, which I paid back. And he walked in and said, right, we're taking you on, mate. You owe us this, but we'll run with you. And that was the day that Middendorp started, 1983, started the Banyule Footy Club and been the major sponsor ever since.
Yeah.
Okay. And, a shitload of money through that football club to help young people and us get moving.
That's your passion, yeah. That's a bit of a passion of yours, trying to help these young kids find a bit of direction.
100%. And old Nick Middendorp, as we spoke about before,
yeah,
he said, Rick, you're keeping the kids off the street so they're not robbing me house. And he was right, because in those days, you know, the kids used to, it wasn't so much crime, nothing like today. But he was happy that we're doing something in the community to make the people better. You know, as I said, you have some kids come in here and they go out here, which is Gail and I's always been our mantra to bring people in and then send them out as good people.
And send them out. That was a great vehicle. Than what they walked in.
Yeah.
Well, that was a great vehicle. But just getting back to Bernie, when I was trying to build a house, he sent me an order back, double what I'd priced, right? And I'm talking in the 300s. And he said, go and buy yourself a house.
Bullshit.
Yeah. So I built a house in Casey Crescent of Eubank. I bought a block of land with my sister Jo and Andrew Yodge, and we split it in half and built two houses in Eubank, and brought our families up starting there and started again. And I can write a book on where I've been since then, mate. Yeah, so
was that after you did the job?
Or first job?
You did
first,
the job.
So you did the
job in his big factory?
Yeah, and then we had another one coming through. When I went broke, I had to ring him and say, Bernie, this is what's happened.
Ah.
And he goes, oh, pal. He used to call me pal, still does to this day. He says, well, what happened? And I told we did the Pyramid Building Society job down in Geelong. Do you remember Thera Corporation going ass up? Pyramid?
Nah.
The biggest.
Yeah, I do.
The biggest crash in Victoria's history, it was.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And the government said they were going to back Pyramid and pay everyone out, which they didn't.
Yeah.
Typical government didn't want to play the game. So I ended up ripping up 600, I think, out of that. And that was a lot of money for blokes that just spent turnover, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And, so we started again, and Bernie's helped me.
What do you think Bernie saw in you? Because for someone to do something like that,
it's a big deal.
Yeah, that's a big move.
We would end up doing close to 15 to 20 million bucks worth of work.
Okay, so he's gone, I need this guy.
Before.
Yeah. Well, it was an ongoing thing. You know, I used to look after all their maintenance. It was 40 or 50 grand a month. It was like
so fantastic. He needed you with it.
He needed me there.
Because
I think the last electrician he had on with him ripped him. He said, no, don't need that.
But you owed him money still from your business that went under?
I didn't owe him money.
Oh, okay.
No.
He owed his suppliers.
I owed the suppliers.
Suppliers. All the creditors out there.
Yeah.
I owed money to. And because with you, I paid everyone back. I had to.
You did, yeah.
Yeah. Because I couldn't, especially your mates, you know, like we had the local mechanic.
Yeah.
Pete, you know, and I went around there and said, oh, you're right.
Everyone was in it together.
Yeah, we had to. I remember, mate, I've paid, Phil, I've paid wages. We paid wages for one another in those times, you know. The whole lot of us had things going down, and I've got money this week, and you've got money next week. We just help one another out, and that was how it was.
How's that sliding doors moment to go down to Brayside and do a PowerPoint?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, that's as I said,
they're the lessons out there.
There's the old saying: 99% of success begins with just showing up.
Up. You didn't even know what you were showing up to.
Yeah, and you don't.
You didn't
need
even
to,
know
right?
you were doing a PowerPoint. You could have been
on my way to the old England ever pop with the boys.
Yeah.
Oh. Hard thing to pass up.
I should have done that down the camera. Yeah. Shouldn't I, Bonnie? Would have been perfect.
Rick, what were the lessons from your first business to your second business did you take?
In spades, how to actually read a P&L and a balance sheet.
Yeah.
That's a good start.
don't spend the turnover.
Don't spend turnover. But and clients, real good clients, client focus. I'd go anywhere for Bernie. Bernie said, look, I've got to put a pole up in Bermagui where he's at. So I'd go there. I'd go there the next day.
Even if it wasn't much money to you,
I wouldn't charge you.
Yeah.
You know, like it was just a love, you know, like another good and I'll stand on this till the day. Mark and I only done one job together in our whole life.
So on one site,
that was Andrew's Menswear in Greensboro.
So for the people playing along at home, Mark's mine and Pete's business partner, who we would have seen on the pod.
He used to own Australasia.
Yeah, biggest shop fitting. Close.
So he got you to do one electrical job.
I sort of made a pact that I didn't want to work. You know, he was like, he was bloody thump your head around.
Brutal.
Yeah. Brutal.
And brutal. I thought, no, we don't need to do that. We're good mates. I don't need to work for you, you know?
So,
which was great because we're still, our friendship's unbelievable now. So
yeah.
I can imagine if we had got into that arena, it would have been a sort of a...
It would have shifted the dynamic of the friendship. Because I remember the Sparky back then was...
PNG?
PNG. Yeah, Greg.
We had opportunity then. I said, Greg, we'll never, ever, ever get into your space. That's what you do. And I think it always pays back in spades. Look, the end of the day, this whole conversation is going to be just being a good person.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing if you are, what comes back the other way. And that's a lesson for everybody, you know, like just if you can just be a good person, be generous, you know, look after people who are in need. Someone wants a chop, just give them a chop because it just comes back and it makes you feel good anyway. Mm. And I've taken 64 years. Look, I was a mongrel dog in business. You know, I was ruthless. And then I thought, I don't need to be like that, you know, and the football club taught me that too. And I think I relate everything back to the footy and people get involved in team management. You know, if you, as you said, you're not ready to come up into the seniors, well, you play another 150 games of the twos to get yourself adjusted to the environment that we're going to be in, to be a good person
and accountable and work as a team and all of those things.
It all 100%. Sits in footy.
And sport in general. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And Ricky said conviction was one thing you needed as a captain coach. Is that like in a business telling the story to your employees? Showing them the journey the you want to go on, vision, the vision board? Like, is that what you mean by conviction?
Well, conviction to me is you stand by who you are. You got to stand by who you are.
Your values.
Your values of what you do. And
yeah.
I heard Scotty talk about it the other week, integrity and what have you. But you've got to implement that into the people that work for you. So if you've got a brownie in there, then you've got to find who he is and say, well, there's two reasons why you are. You're just not hitting the mark with the people you're working with, or you don't want to be here, or you play like it. You've been playing terrible for 3 weeks, you're going to play in the twos.
Mm.
You know? And some of the hardest decisions in football are made the last week of
September.
It's a terrible, terrible thing.
Yeah.
But the reality is, if you want to be there at the best and be the best, you have to make those
tough
stand
calls.
By your conviction. And your conviction is, well, this is what I think's right. You've employed me to do this. I'm your CEO. I'm your football coach. I am the person that you want in charge. Then let's stand by what I think is best for our team, which is Brolec, Banyule, family.
So being true to those values, true to those things that you believe in.
Well, I think, and you know what, if someone asks you to do something, just do it. So I'll get around to it. If you rang me and said I'd done it, I'd do it bang straight away. So I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
It's done.
Hmm.
You know, like, I've got to pay this by Wednesday. No, I'll pay it now.
I'm a bit like that, Rick.
Yeah.
I like to be efficient.
Benny's clean desk over there.
Yeah, that's what we call it. I call it a clean desk.
Perfect.
I can't go to bed unless my desk's fucking clean.
That is magnificent.
Yeah.
That's something that is drilled into you by someone, obviously.
Yeah.
So absolutely. If you've got that sort of conviction to say, right, oh, I know that I can't stand thinking, oh, what have I got to do? I've done it. I'm done. You know, then when everything's going really, really well and there's nothing in your way, you think something's going to fuck up here.
Yeah.
You know,
it's too good.
Everything's too good. What's going on? You know, you're sitting around going,
I'm missing something. Maybe these emails aren't coming through.
No one's ringing me. Everything can't be all right. You know, like, and you know what? I probably fire up when someone's in it. In need, you know, if someone needs something, I'll fire. They're right. Oh, there we go. What do you need? Look, just the other day, a good mate of mine rang Rochie's. As you know, Rochester's underwater, and so is Elmore, and we've got properties on the Murray River. And I said, mate, I've got 30, 40 beds in three houses on the Murray. You can just have take the families up there. Away you go.
Yeah.
Won't cost them a cent. They can have. I'll fill the cupboards full of whatever. Just get them up there, because it's not there. Rochie's not there.
Mm.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's that hit home. And I was, I was in Queensland. I just wish I had been home because I would have been up doing the shot. You know, yeah. And we've got so many different people we can call on.
Mm.
To, I would have sent the whole of Brolic up there if they needed them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Just go. Help. Just get it done. Because you're not going to leave much behind, mate. No, we were in the Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays of our life. Well, yeah. I am, like, and you're thinking, well, today I've been successful in business, yeah. Successful in sport, yeah. I measure my success on Jay, Courtney and Rory, which is my three children, and they're beautiful kids. You know, shake your hand, look in the eye.
Yeah.
Work their little asses off. Very, very respectful. Love having fun. And we love them to death. So if I leave the earth tomorrow, I've had a great life.
Yeah.
And good fun getting there.
Would you say your perspective's changed a bit, Rick, now with the kids and stuff? And you're obviously, we were talking before, you're passionate about helping the kids at the footy club and sending them out. Like, have you always been like that? Or is it as once you made money and you realised there's only so much you can do with it and you can't take it with you, does that sort of change your mindset and you start looking for ways to leave a mark behind, or your legacy, I suppose, of, yeah, like whether it be through your kids or people that you've helped along the way?
Good question. Right now, I would say yes, but I didn't think like that then.
Hmm.
Because
I didn't think, because as you get, you'll be different in 5 years' time, the way you think about stuff. And so are you, and so are you, and so are you.
We all will. We've
got a different perspective on life because it was all, me, I've got to get there. But I think being unselfish is a great, great, great thing.
Do you wish maybe you had been a bit more like that?
Giving back further, earlier.
Further.
I wish I had gone back to when I was
earlier
20,
on.
Well, I couldn't have given much back in 1990 because I didn't have it.
But you could have given your
love,
time.
Give you love. Yeah, yeah.
You can always give time and donate or, volunteer.
100%. And look, our network of people have done that with the EB Research Foundation.
Oh, yeah, you
with
guys.
Brighter
are,
Days,
yeah.
With, all these huge organisations that that Scotty and the boys have put together. And we're always in behind it. That Tilly's part of my family anyway in the EB Research. So... That sort of thing to me is just, that's a regulation. That's just done. Hmm. But going back behind and going to see, I've got a fantastic affinity with the Down syndrome people because of Ken. Hmm. And if I see a Down syndrome little bloke or little girl or whatever, and we get up and I've just got this affinity with them because I understand where they come from, mm-hmm. and I understand the love that they have. Yeah. You never see an angry dancer. Yeah, they just true. Don't. They've mm-hmm. got this little chromosome that just makes them happy, and they want to learn, and they want to understand, and they love music, and they make you laugh. You don't laugh at them. You laugh with them because of who they are. I mean, I remember Ken, some of the stuff he got up to, I could write a book on it, but... Mum used to go, Kenny, you watch the toast. I'm going to hang the clothes on the clothesline. So he'd come back and the toast's on fire. And Trudy would say, Ken, the toast's on fire. He goes, I'm watching it, Trudy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they didn't get the next set. But, some of those stories I could tell you would be incredible. Yeah. But it glued us. And as I said, absolutely. Not one of us have ever had a blue, ever. And I could call on any one of those in a heartbeat and they'd be here. Mm. And that's my mum. And then my dad, back in the day, me used to bend steel with his bare hands. I thought I was Superman, jumped off the balcony one day and broke my arm because I couldn't fly, had the cape on. That didn't work. But, all this, it goes back to, as we said, mate, if you're going to build a house and you haven't got good foundation in the house, it's going to fall down on you. So we had that, and I had a loving family, and that's what's in me. I just want to, I don't mind giving.
And now you're doing that for your kids.
Yeah.
And like you said, they're who you're going to leave behind. Old Denzel Washington says that you don't see a U-haul behind a hearse. You can't take any of it with you. And all you do is leave behind. You leave behind the people you've created, the lessons and the teachings that you've passed on.
Yeah, well, that's that, probably with football. Like Gail and I have been a footy club since 1983. And we're still there now. And we run this this coterie group, which learn about. Called Bears in Business, which is... It's instead of going to it's little fish, so I put in $3,000 or $4,000 for the footy club next year. We'll put a sign up on the wall in the clubhouse. Well,
a bit boring.
Yeah, you walk down there, you go, well, I've got my sign on the wall.
Yeah,
stiff shit, But we network
and we get like we can have $2-3 billion worth of turnover in the room at one time, and we get people talking about their story, like we're talking now about business, like how it started. You know, some of the people we've had, Mario Verrocchi, we've had all these Chemist Warehouse boys, David Hayes, we've had David Evans, we've had Scotty. Like, you know, it goes on and on the list, but we get the best. And then you network in the room.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Like, mates of mine have picked up accounting practice over there. He's got this guy, da-da-da. And it just this network, creates.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, your $4,000 becomes 400.
And you got a deal.
So you're creating value.
Yeah.
Creating value.
Yeah.
And you're giving people.
So he's giving value instead of just taking the money, putting the sign up and going, tick the box, move on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I can tell you now, you go around down your way, you'll go. There'll be Rolex signs everywhere because we just sponsor local cricket clubs and footy clubs and da-da-da because the people are involved with the business. But I don't ask for I don't want that. But if you're coming to our place, you want value for money, bang.
Banyuls a pretty strong club, fair to say. It's one of
because of this guy.
100%, man. And one of the strongest clubs in Victoria. Would you say that's probably why? It's got guys like you behind it, not just trying to tick boxes and stack money in a bucket to put signs up. It's about how can we give back the value, same as like the EB stuff that you all the stuff that you and Rick and Mark and all like link arms on feel like it's always about, it's not just about the money, it's about giving value as well.
Well, I said to Cal the other day, I reckon we would have employed between Rick Brockwell Electrical and Brolic over the years probably 50 to 70, maybe 100 kids through that, because they can play footy.
Yeah.
They've got a, you know. So instead of saying, oh, we're going to pay you $500 a game, well, how about a career, mate? And we'll park you in here and you'll come out the other end looking like this. Well, I remember probably one of the best players that played our footy club walked in the door. He used to work in the timber yard. I said, what are you doing? He goes, I said, you thought about being an electrician? He goes, no, I wouldn't know how to do that. I said, well, yes, you will. So he's done his apprenticeship, had a family, ended up running some of the big jobs in town.
Yeah.
And then he's just moved up to Bly Bly and Sunshine Coast and starting his own little gig. But he's come out a most beautiful person, and his beautiful wife and his kids. It's just, to me, and we called and seen him. We went around Australia and we just called and seen him, and so great to see him and so great to see. That's only one story, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you've had some shit fights on the way. People that just don't want to play the game and you know, you think you're doing the right thing and maybe you're not, sort of giving people opportunity, because some people, you can give people opportunity and they can just turn around and go,
they want it?
Oh, I deserve that anyway.
Yeah.
You know, no one deserves anything. I mean, what do? You plan utopia and work backwards from there. I mean, that's what they say. So I didn't actually quite plan utopia, but I planned reality.
Yeah. Do you think you guys have put so much time and effort, have so much value in that space, the footy club, believe in all that because of what it did to you when you were a young fella?
1,000%. That was my sliding door moment. If I had been made captain coach of that football club, where I'm coaching, I'm 21 years of age, coaching blokes at 30 that have been there for years and years and years to be successful while still working my own business, have my own business. So I used to piss off from work and go straight to training.
Yeah.
And then do training, go and do a job on the way home, get up, do the ordering. We had no mobile phones, remember? Sit at the desk, ring up, make the order for middies, ring the blokes, you've got to be here. Go to the site, get on the tools, come home, quote, 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, like it was fantastic.
There was no time for mucking up.
No, well, you didn't. But you know what? I'd rather go, I'd say, you've got to be at 8 o'clock. I've got to be at the footy club.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I seemed to want to put the footy club before.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it didn't matter anyway because it just grew so. You know, and then as we head to now, I don't know if you want to go to now, but we can talk about that. But I don't know how much time we've got. I can talk
about that. No, we've got plenty of time, mate.
You know, like we're from the 90s onwards, after we fell over, the way back was learn that balance sheet, learn that profit and loss. So on the 15th of every month, we had the numbers. I knew, I thought, oh, Christ, hell, look at this. We're going ass backwards and you know what's going on.
Even though it's not pretty and you don't want to see it, you need to know it.
Well, you've got to see it.
And that's the first thing Mark taught us, isn't it?
Like, 100%.
Yeah, like walked in, said profit and loss, boys. It's all, like that's where it was, and let's get our heads into the numbers. Yeah.
But he used to kick me ass. Like, we shared the office together down at Nostra Lodge
for
a long, long time.
Clifton Hill.
Yeah. Even though we didn't do a job together.
Yeah.
Did Andrew's men's wedding.
Where was that? Northland.
No, up at Greensboro.
Oh, Burra.
And Mark did the fit out and I did the electrical. And Andrew, God bless his soul, loved him. He passed. His son, Scotty, still he's in the bears of business. Love him.
Yeah.
We did the job and we said, look, just give us a credit, right? And Andrew goes, what? He said, no, just, I think it's only about 15 grand or 16 grand. Just give us a credit, you know. Anyway, everywhere we went, Mark and I had the same clothes on. I remember going to the race, had a red, Andrew used to say, I've got the latest gear for you, mate. And I said, what? He said, come in, lock the doors, Ricky Brockwell's here. Right, so get in. They put me in the room, I came out in this beautiful red suit, red shoes, red socks, lapel. Well, when you say red, blood, like a
Auburn
blood maroon,
you know. Well, you know, that's sort of testament to the story of you said, well, you were spending the revenue early days and you're both probably trying to up each other on the suits and the cars and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then now you're like spending the credits.
Well, mate, it was one up the ship then,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
You had Scott Didier, Philip Ross, me.
Tough crowd, tough.
Call the four musketeers, like you'd be into it. Like, what has he got? Right, I need one of them. You know, like,
yeah.
Just
Rick, can I ask with Brolec, have you ever had partners along the journey and even now? And would you say, yeah, has that been a benefit or would you recommend if someone was starting out today that they do it with someone? What's your thoughts on partnering with people?
I'm fairly strict on that. I married my partner.
Oh, the boss, yep.
That's it.
That's it. So yeah. You've never had a business partner, never taken investment, never thought about it. Yeah, right.
No. Done it all myself, mate. And you know why? Because conviction is conviction. It falls on you. I wouldn't want to be in business with you. Not, no disrespect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you've got a wife. You got a wife. You got a wife. So there's, and I've got a wife. So there's eight of us in.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm.
No matter
true.
What.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, you're out of the picture with your missus, and she starts going you. Then we're going to sell down by you. And it's a fan. And you know, like, not for me. The Brockwell Family Trust owns Brolec, and that's our family owned. So.
Yeah.
But it's run as a corporation, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure.
And that
drives
me to the guy we've got working for it now. So
Brocky, you went under, you learnt the profit and loss, the budget, the forecasting. Now you're, like I said, massive company now. You know, talk to us about that and talk to us about where you are now. Like, we've had conversations, you've employed, you know, some good operators, you're winning some big contracts, you know, what's got you there?
And what does a big contract look like?
Well, in terms of mechanical, electrical, like as I said, I do agree we probably are in the top three mechanical. Wouldn't be light and power, but because there's some massive companies out there like that in light and power, certainly mechanical, our expertise is mechanical, electrical. For those who don't know what that is, it's just air conditioning, like refrigeration type works that we wire all the main switchboards in to controls that control damper motors and stations. And it's pretty complex stuff, but it's for us, it's easy. Like, if you asked me to wire a house when I was a kid, I wouldn't know how to do it.
Mm.
But mechanical, I could wire a 50-story building, in mech. So, to answer your question, I would say when Jay Brockwell, my eldest son, come to me when the business was starting to grow a bit, and he goes, I threw him to the wolves, you know, when he came out. I said, righto, you're going to be running this and running that, not giving him any thought about training him into something, project management. And I thought, no, you'll be right. And it just sort of got a bit daunting for him because getting big and he just started to paddle a little bit. And he, in the end, I think he ended up hating it because he said, oh, we need to do something. So that'll be five years ago, I think. And you wouldn't believe it. Out of the blue, a guy that used to do a lot of work for me as a kid who was nearly close to CEO of a massive company in Melbourne rings the phone. He goes, can I come and see you? I said, oh, yeah, sure, mate. What's up? He said, I just want to come talk to you. And it sort of fell on the same time when Jay was sort of having a few problems. So Rick Nichols walked in the door, sat down with Jay Brockwell and myself, and we already had a couple of ripping project managers, Aaron and Ross, and we got together and anyway, we done a deal. He come on board, left a company that's doing, I think, 130, 140 mil. Turnover a year, and come to us, and we're only a little, or not little, but we're doing the tens and what have you, and then it become, now it's heading north of 30, 35.
Yeah.
So, mill, that is.
Yeah.
Rick's just restructured the whole place. So, he come in and just made it really
quite team orientated. I did tell him when he came, I said, we're not a corporation, mate, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to be a corporation. We are a family business, and I want it to stay that way because the people love out there the relationship you can have with the family. You're dealing with the director, and you're the director right now. So if I'm not here, you. Yeah. So they deal with you. So you let them know that I'm still sitting behind the table making the decisions if you want to, but I'm saying you've got free rein to run the business. So Rick started on, and the business has tripled in turnover. It's been fantastic the way we operate the business. Well recognised, got some big jobs on. As I said, we're doing the tunnels at the moment for the mech for the CBD North, CBD South, Arden Street. Yeah. Huge.
Wow.
We're into nearly signing the box, I hope. Next, when this is played, that we have picked up the Footscray Hospital, the new mechanical
that's
there.
Massive.
Also, we're looking after Melbourne Airport, which is always ongoing. 101 Collins, we're just in there all the time. So
Fed Square.
Yeah, we've got the
so anything that matters, we're basically running the show.
Well, we are. Fed Square, we now have got the maintenance contract there.
So if you get online, for the people playing along at home, you go on Google 101 Collins and you look at the pictures and the skyline, the lighting, the illumination of the top, that's what you guys have...
That was our flagship.
Which is it'll blow your mind. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's a drone. We've got drone footage of that on our site if you go on the website. That's the one that won the award, the NECA award.
I think
we ran second again this year in Sydney for the refit of 80 Collins.
Yeah.
Switchboard refit. We had to change in, change out without any operation.
Any
shutdown.
Any downtime. How do you do that?
Oh, you've got to build all these shutdown boxes.
Pay Rick a lot of money. That's
how you're doing. I can't even update my website without the thing collapsing.
Yeah. Well, don't ask me, mate. I'm just driving around Australia in a caravan.
Hey, Rick, was there ever a time, Rick, because the guys that, you know, the four musketeers, you guys, like all four, at least two out of the four, you being a third, have gone on and sold their businesses and one, being Rick, Scotty has floated. So once you start turning over the 30, 35 mils and stuff, you were pretty passionate about keeping it a family business. But was there a time where you think, because most business guys, they think the day they sell, that's the day you sort of cash in and the bank account flushes up. Was that ever a consideration, or you just love the family business? It's part of your identity and it's not about the money.
Well, I was talking to Rick about that the other day. I'm heading towards... So I'm 64, I'm at 65 this year. Then, you know, what happens in the next 10 years? Do you stay on? Do you go? What happens? I'll certainly stay, want my finger in the pie. Just not so much the money, but developing the business for them. I wouldn't know. I don't think it's on the agenda to sell it because it's owned by our trust and the kids hopefully will benefit from that. And so will Rick and Aaron and Ross. They're the three major players at the business. You know, and you're feeding 100 mouths also. And I'd hate to see that disappear, which disappeared up everyone's ass when...
Yeah, that's a good point.
When you look at the one group when, it was just... That was a tragedy.
We were there. It was a tragedy. I lost my job, yeah.
And I'd hate to see that because I want to be remembered as a good person.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say Mark was amazing.
Oh, he's remembered as a legend,
Everyone used to blame him. It was never, ever Mark. But it was... he did the right thing and sold out. I remember he walked to my office that day. He said, "Oh, dude, we're going to see." He started crying. I said, "What are you crying? Oh, they want to buy business." I said, "Well, what's wrong?" He goes, "Oh, what are they offering for it? 12 million." He goes, $75 million.
He's crying over $75 million.
Look at him going, "Get out of your office.
Right.
Get out of your office.
Get out of here, big boy."
Yeah. So, but at the end of the day, no, it's not the agenda.
Well, I reckon, like, my take on, because I was working there at the time, my take, Rick, is it just went to show how important Mark was to the business, which is, you know, like that family business, because we were part of it and that business was built on good people.
Yep.
It was people that someone had to know someone to get a job. My brothers worked there, they knew Dad. Pete's dad, brother played golf. You know, everyone knew someone and that's what made it so great.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think that it could be so high and it could still collapse just based on shit people. You know, they came in just crunching numbers, right? They were just looking at the bottom line and that's all they cared about. And us on the bottom, like us out on site and stuff or within the business, we felt that. And it sort of changed the sentiment of the company and the whole thing came down.
Mm.
Which is to your point, you know, how important that family business and people out there, they respect the guy behind it.
But you look, if you look, like all of you go on the side, like we're a corporation, really.
But yeah, we're not. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
But we're driven by, like there's three geniuses in that business, and there's probably about 70 to 80 to 100 staff on people on the road that are very good at what their craft. Like at project management days are sort of over. You can have a guy who's a foreman project manager on a job, and he's just dialed in on the system we've got. And the timesheets are in, he runs the show, he becomes a project manager, but he's still on the tools half the time. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And it all changes. Like, you don't have to have this office with 1,000 people in it to be a big corporation. You can be massive.
Yeah.
And mate, I don't give a shit if we turn over 10 million, 30 million, 40 million, as long as the bottom line is right.
Yeah.
And on volume, you can do 30 million, still make one. Mm. You can do 10 and make one.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Brocky, one question I want to ask before we wrap up. You just said in the trust, it's not just your family. You've got the your CEOs that you've employed in the trust as well.
No, you can't do that.
You can't.
No, it's just your family trust, but they're well looked after. I mean, are they
shareholders, Rick, at all? The new CEO, is he a shareholder?
No.
Oh, okay.
But he's more than happy with a good deal. He's got a good deal.
Yeah,
and he's quite. He's not a greedy person. He's from a family. He's got a beautiful family. He's got a lovely wife, four beautiful kids. He loves what he does. He's like a bloody ever ready battery. He's up and going. Like, and I mentioned the story. We're driving around Australia, Gail and I. We went around with Mark. We all went when COVID hit. Right? And the phone would ring, and Rick said, "Oh, look, have a great time, you guys." Da da da. I said, "Oh, thanks, mate. Everything going all right?" He goes, "Mate, I'll only ring you with good news, because you pay me to get rid of the bad news."
Mm.
And go and sit in the car. I love it when the phone's going to ring, because every time that Rick's on the phone, another job popped up. You know? And Gail's sitting there going, "Yippee!" She get on the punt and away we go. You know, like, so much fun. And to have that feeling that Rick was in there just batting it like he's got my ass, and I know he has. To have that feeling is and be allowed to let Gail and I live our lifestyle after the hard work of, you know, when we're young kids, right through our life to this now, is a blessing. And he cops that responsibility as he is. My other boys, Jay, Courtney and Rory, my daughter's Courtney, they've got another business called Project Plus Services, which is an insurance scoping business. They do a lot of stuff with Scotty and insurance. They virtual scope, like they'll scope a project. At the moment, we can see all the dramas going on in Victoria and New South Wales with the floods. They just scope the work just there and then live off a phone, and it just downloads, bang, goes straight to the insurance, and away they go. So you don't need assessors, really.
They created the software behind that.
Yeah, Joe.
Incredible.
Rory was in the footy club sitting with a bloke, and the bloke said, "Well, you heard about this?" And he walked to my office, because they hated electrical in the end. They didn't want to be sparkies.
Yeah.
They'd had a gusful. And then Courtney went out, she's got three F45s and a body fit. So that kills them. Like, she does really well. She's living on the coast now with my grandson. So she's kicking ass there. She was working for Brolec, and then she's working for Project Plus doing the payroll and, you know, like the family. And Jo, my sister, and I haven't mentioned her, has been with me for 35 years.
Yeah.
Still there now.
Yeah.
She runs the accounts. And I love that fact that she runs the accounts, right?
Yeah. You need someone in
there. And that's what I'm saying. That's my best friend.
Yeah.
Right there. My little sister, who's just been mind blowing. Loyal, went through the tough. She worked for Mark for a while. She was at Australasia when you guys would have been there, I reckon. Look, Mark's EA, and then when we split when he sold up, and I went up to Heidelberg, and Mark went to kept the building in Hoddle Street, just up the road here. After being in Langridge Street, just here.
Just here, literally.
Yeah. And then she's just been unbelievable, mate. Like, there'd be nowhere without her, and I can tell you, she's something else to me. She knows that. I have to tell her. As I said, the whole lot have been fantastic. So it's all family, you know, and Courtney's, you know, she's been brilliant. Jay's just pretty young gun. He's a young gun, and Rory's just the goer. You know, like and Jay and Rory learn off one another, and they've taught one another, you know, and that business has gone really, really, really well.
Nice. Sounds like you've been a good role model, and you've got a few good ones coming through, Rick.
Yeah, well, hopefully that's, mate. As I said, you know, you can judge who we are by who we leave behind.
Yeah,
couldn't agree more. And I think, just if you're a good person, nothing really. Look,
people prey on good people, but you always know who a dead one is anyway. You know what I mean? If you can't walk in a room and know who's no good, yeah, then you've got to sharpen up.
You've got to sharpen up.
Yeah. So, and that's probably what we've all been able to pick through our life. So,
hey, Rick, that's probably just wrapping up. We like to ask a question. What advice would you give, you know, young men, young women out there, maybe had a bad day, maybe looking to start a business, step off the line, whatever it might be, what's the lesson that you can give them right now?
Well, I don't want to make it a cliche, but if you sit back and close your eyes and think about, I wanted to be air traffic controller when I was a kid. I thought, well, that's good money because I see how much money I used to earn.
Mm.
But right now, I don't think I'd like to be an air traffic controller. But at least I had looked at something and thought I'd like to be that. I reckon the formative years between 15 to 22 are crucial, especially with young women and young men, because the expectation on you is from parents who will say, righto, you're going to uni, you're doing this, you're doing that. Well, I don't want to go to uni, I want to go and do that. So you've got to, if you, in my mind, you've got to piece together, and it's fucking hard to know what you want to do when you're 15, 16.
Oh, it's impossible. Yeah. You either do or you don't, isn't
it? Yeah, and what you got to get in the back of your mind is, don't worry about it. Because the more you worry about it, the more you're going to wake up and have a bad day. Yeah. So don't worry about that. Yeah. Just have something in the back of your mind that you're going to be something that's going to pop in your head, and when it comes, and when it's in your mind, you just do it.
Yeah,
you just go and do it, because that you only if you said to something tomorrow, oh, we're going to do that, I said, geez, that sounds right, I'm going to go and do that, and I would have then, when I was 15, someone said you should go and do that. Mm. I reckon that's a good idea, and I did what the old man said. I'm not going to uni, I'm going to be a plumber.
Mm.
Well, fuck that, I don't want to be a plumber now, I want to be an electrician.
That's incredible advice, because I've always said, like, because I've got my three kids, and the greater, because I had that problem, right? That's why it took me as a bit of a late bloomer, Rick, because I just didn't know what I wanted to do.
Mm.
Like, I just couldn't. And you try and manufacture these ideas of what you think you should do or what you could do, and you just don't. And then eventually, over time, I figured it out, sort of thing. And I think the greatest gift you can give kids is help them find direction. Just get them to try stuff, man.
100%.
And who cares? If it's not right for you, try something else. But people don't try, and then they go, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I think, yeah.
I feel like we're showing our age too here, mate. Because a lot of young people these days, they jump industries.
Oh, yeah.
In two,
but
3 years.
But that's good, because that's what you've got to do,
is it good, though?
It is good, man. Well, you don't want to get stuck doing shit that you don't want to do, right? Everyone's got to do what's right for them, because you only live one life. Right, so too many people through our generation got stuck in jobs they hated and lived their life, the rest of their life that way. I nearly fucking did it, man.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And the way that I broke out was not easy. It was hard, man. Do you know, the older you get, the more responsibilities you get, the more difficult it becomes to break out and find and do something for you.
Well, I think you get in a rut, don't you? Like, people just have, like, go to work, dang a dang. I can imagine back in the day when they had the Ford factory. We looked after the Ford factory with Crockford Robertson. A bloke would sit there just go, boom, boom. And I thought,
robot.
And I was a young kid thinking, that can't be good for you.
Mm.
Like, you go home, have tea, go to bed, get up,
come back. It's not fulfilling,
boom,
is it?
Yeah. Boom. But that was what it was then.
Correct.
We've got opportunity now.
Correct.
And I suggest that these things, social media stuff, just bag it. You don't need to read about what some other person thinks about you.
Yeah.
You make your own mark. Mm. You say, I'm this. I'm not on. You would never try and find me. I'm not on social media.
You're not there.
I'm not there. No, I don't want to be there, because you know what? I don't even like having my photo taken in a spot where I'm thinking, well, what's he doing with him anyway?
Mm.
None of your business.
Mm.
You know, like, we've become so, as I said, disconnected from being connected.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Like, kids walking around. If a kid walks in my house like that, grab the thing and you're in our joint.
Yeah.
Sit down.
Be present.
You know, you want to have a conversation and learn something. Well, that thing doesn't exist at the minute. I know they're necessary. Like, Christ, imagine if I had that when I was a young kid ordering your stuff. Like, you know, like, unbelievable.
Yeah, you run your business off your
thing. Well, you do now. Yeah. And, mate, running your business, I haven't got a problem with it. But social media and someone having an opinion of what you are and who you are and what you should be doing and where you are and what you're doing that day yourself is no one's business.
Yeah.
No one's business.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be. Yeah. That's where you get the bullying from, because people... And another thing in life, mate, never be jealous of anyone. Be envious.
Hmm.
Jealousy will kill you.
Yeah.
That's Can you explain the difference, Rick?
Well,
envious and
put it this way, mate. If I was jealous of something and I wanted it bad enough, you'd do anything to get it.
Okay.
If you're envious of something, that means I want to do what you're, I want to be like you are, and I'm going to try and get to what you are without putting you before the cause.
Yeah, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Jealousy cannot win, mate.
It's a curse.
Just cannot win. Yeah, but to be envious is brilliant. Because you say, right, I remember it. I wanted to be Philip Ross when I met him. I thought, have a look at his business.
Yeah.
God, he's driving around a Porsche. He's got this, he's got that. I want to do that.
Yeah.
I didn't say, fuck him, he's a prick, you know. That's what happens. Oh, yeah. He's no good. Yeah. Oh, he must be running drugs. Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah. That's what happened. Yeah,
can't be doing good. He can't be succeeding.
His dad gave him the money.
Aussies are good at it, mate. You know, you buy a Porsche over in the States, everyone goes, oh, how good's that? Yeah. No, you buy one here, someone will key it down the side.
Tall poppy syndrome.
You know, it's and so that's jealousy. But envy is, park envy in your head, because that's the one that
gives
drives
you ambition.
It
gives drives you ambition.
It. Yeah, and some kids can sit there and say, I want to be like what Cal's done. That's what I want to be.
Mm. Yeah, you want to be envious. Envious.
Mm. Want to be envious. You don't want to be jealous. Cause jealousy, I walk in the door and shoot you in the head and say, I'm taking your business off you.
Yeah. You know, like, kill you.
So that to me is a simple thing, mate. And to end it, like, just to everyone, just very important to be a good person. And if you're a good person, nothing goes wrong.
It'll come back. It'll come back around.
And just give. Just give. Give. If you got it, give it.
Yeah.
The world has a funny way of looking after good people.
That's right. 100%. Yeah, but if you're good yourself, look, mate, you can lay you down in the grave and say, well, I can give no more. I've had a ball. I've had an absolute ball in my life. And I love the people. I love my mates. I love, you know, my family and my club and my business. And the boys, I've just met the boys the other week. I come down to the coast and we had a mid-season drink. And every one of the kids was so respectful, and so
yeah,
we haven't got a bad player in the team at the minute, you know. And good. that's for Rick.
I was just going to say, we can't let Rick get away. I heard a rumor, and I think you normally have to die to
have a footy ground named after you, Rick.
Yeah, like there's not too many living. Is that true, Rick? Yeah, so the Banyule footy ground, is that
it's
right?
Not a bloody footy ground.
It'd be remiss if we didn't bring that up.
Oh, Cal. Well, I said, I know what this will be about me today. No, I tried to get away from I today. But that happened.
But that's a big one, Rick. Like, that's a genuine thing, a too. One. Most people don't
Sounds like you've been kind to a lot of people, Rick.
Yeah. Well, that oval right now is under construction, so I hope they don't change the name.
Don't fuck it up.
Well, I better go and just get run over by a track and bury me in the middle of it. But yeah, that was an honour. 205 there. That was pretty special day. Hearts there, mate. Love it. Love it, love every bit of it. Just not so. Just the people that surround it, you know, like the people I met from there.
I play basketball with one of the boys as well.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, Spencer Graham.
Oh, no, Spence. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, no, good boys.
Shout out, Spence.
Rick.
You won't have a better place or a better time in your life. So hopefully they go really well. We're in Division One this year now, so they've stepped up. So
this will sort you out.
Yeah, that'll sort us out. But anyway, we'll be up to the challenge, mate. It's Banyule Footy Club.
Beautiful, Rick, mate. Thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure,
boys. A lot of lessons in that. Anyone, like, share, subscribe, get the lessons out. Be kind. See you at the top.